It's 4:02 on a rainy afternoon here in Red Bank, New Jersey, and this is the TDN Writers Room podcast. I'm Bill Finley, hosting this week as our fearless leader, Joe Bianca, is boots on the ground at the Breeders' Cup, covering it for the TDN, but I'll try to do the best I can. So, gentlemen, why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hi, it's Brian DiDonato, racing editor at the TDN and managing partner of Franklin Ave Equine.
Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable, and almost out the door to head to the Breeders' Cup myself.
This is Alan Carrasso, managing editor of the TDN, and looking forward to this discussion.
And coming on the heels of Saul Kuhman, big shoes to fill as our TDN second guest here on the Writers' Room. But Mark Cassie is more than able to fill anyone's shoes in this business, as he is one of the most prominent trainers and successful trainers in the sport. And he'll have a busy Breeders' Cup afternoon on both Friday and Saturday. And Mark, thanks for joining us here on the TDN Writers' Room. And why don't we get right into the races that you'll be involved with, starting on Friday in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, where you have two horses, one of which is for Mr. John Green, sitting right here. And can you get Mr. Green proven strategies into the winner's circle in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf? The line maker doesn't think you have much of a chance, but I know John is high on this horse.
Yeah, well, line makers usually don't have a clue. So, hey, we've already been, John and I have already been through a lot just to get him to this spot. So, maybe the lines will, the stars will line up. I think everybody's underestimating a little bit. He's a horse that we've always thought a lot of, and I think he can continue to improve. He'll definitely need to on Friday, but I think he's capable of it.
Well, why don't we have John Green start? I mean, this is, sure. We have two celebrities in the room here.
I feel very honored.
We'll just leave the room, John.
Mark, hey, it's John. How are you?
Hi, John.
Hi. Yeah, one of the things that Mark and I talked about before we decided to go into this race was whether or not the horse could handle a few things. One is, to be able to go a two-turn mile on the turf. And number two is to actually, physically, can he make it out there in time? And how is he as far as being a shipper? Mark, do you want to talk a little bit about, when he got out to California and how he's doing there?
Yeah, he's doing well. As you know, John, we were deep into the also eligible. We didn't know for sure that we didn't think he was going to get in. So you and I talked and we made some alternative plans, one of which was to enter him for opening day on Sunday at Churchill. So sure enough, he was scheduled to fly out, I want to say, Saturday on a plane with some of our other horses. Well, we didn't put him on the plane, and then maybe 3 hours after that, we got a call saying he was going to get in. So then we scrambled and had to pull, do a bunch of different things, but we were lucky enough to get him on the last plane he could possibly get here in time to be. The rules read you have to be on the ground 72 hours before you run. And we were, pushing that, but we got him here. And I thought he looked great this morning. The good thing about him, he has a great mind, and we wouldn't have attempted this had he not. But he's already, done some traveling. Nothing bothers him, and he looked well this morning. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. We've already, like I said, we've already jumped through a few hoops to get here, and maybe it's meant to be.
Mark will be rooting for that horse because of John Green. But again, getting back to the line maker and the public opinion on the race, most believe you have a better chance with Peace Achieved. And I'll let the whole room join in on this one. But my question is that this horse turned into a different animal with the blinkers on. Is that what made the improvement when you went from finishing seventh in a maiden race at Churchill to now a two-time stakes winner with this horse?
I think that's part of it. And you know as well as I do, Bill, sometimes when you're sprinting on the turf, it's a hustle, hustle, hustle. And he may just not have liked that much. He's a real pretty horse. We always thought something of him. I was a little disappointed in his first couple performances. But boy, once we put the blinkers on, we ran him long, and he could use some of that speed to get forwardly placed. He's become unbeatable. I think if he was going to – if they were going to get him, they should have got him at Keeneland. The turf had some give to it, which I don't think he liked, plus maybe a little farther than he wants to go. So he's not going to have to face those two problems on Friday. And I think he I love the post position. A few times I've come out here, my Conquistador, I'm trying to think of somebody else that I thought I had extremely good shot of winning these Breeder Cup turfs and been beat by post position. Can't blame that this time. I think our post positions are good, and I think Peace Achieved will come away from there running on the inside, and I think he'll be extremely tough.
Hey, Mark, it's Brian. Kind of on that same note, where do you put him? Where do you expect him to be in the race? Seems like there's a fair bit of pace outside of him.
Yeah, he's going to be, we'll see how the break goes, but he's going to be really close. So whether he'll be on the lead or just very close to it, if he's far back, then he's in serious trouble.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. And once again, Mark Cassie will send out a pair of runners, number 2, 260. Coming off a big win in the Florida Stallion Series down at Gulfstream, and Perfect Alibi, second last time out in the Alcibiades in a grade one effort in Keeneland. Both horses look pretty good on paper. Again, they've got, according to the line, they've got decent shots, but they won't be among the favorites. And Mark, why don't you start with 260? This is a horse that really seemed to find herself in her last start. She had some trouble. She ducked out, lost her rider in a race at August 13th at Gulfstream, and came back and was a true gentleman, not a gentleman, whatever the version of that would be for a lady, quite a lady, led all the way and won by 6 1/4 lengths. She seems to have really turned her career around very quickly.
She trains like a pretty good horse. You'll see where she broke her maiden, pretty impressive first time out. Came back, caught the slop, got away a little slow, and nobody could blame her for that one. Then the second leg of the Florida Stallion Stakes, she was running along, the horse ducked a little bit and put some pressure on her. She ducked a little, and I think it just surprised Edgar, and he lost his iron and fell off. That was unfortunate. And we came back. She trained really good. I said to Gary Barber, I said, this filly deserves another chance. Now, she was fortunate because it was really, honestly, a pretty weak race that she won. And normally I would have not been coming to the Breeders' Cup, but I thought she won with ease. And more importantly, she ran pretty fast. If you compared it, and I can't think of the horse's name, Safi's horse, who they think a lot of, who won the colt division two races later, they ran almost identical times. He had just run 290 buyers prior to that. So I knew her number was going to come back pretty good. I think she ended up getting an 81 or 82 buyer, which is, which is pretty good, especially going two turns for the first time. I know there's a lot of people are excited about Simon Callahan's filly down on the rail, and she's probably all right, but she hasn't been two turns, and also Steve's filly, she's been impressive, but she hasn't been two turns. It's a big plus to have got a two-turn race under her. So she could surprise everybody and run fairly well, I think. Got a good post, so that's good.
Now, do you think she needs – I mean, obviously, she improved a lot on the lead last time. Do you think she needs the lead?
I hope not, because I think that spot's going to be occupied probably by the one. Mm-hmm. Unless we were to break like a shot and maybe some of the others didn't break as well, I could see us just sitting off of it. Mm-hmm. Can she do that? I don't know.
And Marcus, John, it's John Green again. With regard to your other part of the entry, Perfect Alibi in this race, it looks like she's steadily improving each race. She's getting a little bit better, going a little bit further. Last race in the Alcibiades, was that a matter of she just didn't get there? British Idiom just ran a better race that day? And what do you think she gained from that last race as far as experience? Because we know the Sky Maces need a couple of races to kind of get everything together in their head.
Yeah, I think Brad's filly ran a big race. I knew we were in trouble at the 5/8 pole. Our filly's a real big filly. She's almost 17 hands tall. Everybody that saw her said she can't wait to run farther and, wait till she goes two turns. The Sky Maces can do a little bit out of anything. I've had them win going a mile and a half. She was also out of a Maria's Mon mare. So, again, distance. Her two races up at Saratoga, I was surprised. There was fairly good pace, and she was able to sit right off the pace pretty easily. Now we go to Keeneland going down the backside. They're not running that fast. And Jose, who is substituting for Irad because he's on days, I can see him nudging her along. And you could kind of, she was just climbing. She's a big filly. I was disappointed with the track conditions on opening day at Keeneland. I thought it was way too dry, very cuppy, and a lot of horses didn't handle it. And I don't think she handled it. If, in fact, Perfect Alibi just did like the track and just wasn't good enough, then she's going to be in big trouble on Friday. I'm hoping, and I don't think so. I think she'll probably like Santa Anita a little better, I hope, at least. You know, she is a grade one winner. They don't give those things away easily. She belongs in there. So we just need some luck and see what happens. I'm glad she, I think the two-turn race will help her, having one of those under.
Very good. So let's turn our attention now to Saturday. And Mark may or may not agree with me on this, but I think certainly his best chance to get to the winner's circle in the Breeders' Cup is in the Breeders' Cup Mile with Got Stormy, a very, very good filly who beat the boys in the four-star Dave at Saratoga, grade one, and came back and ran a solid second in the Woodbine Mile. And they accused me of hogging the conversation, so I'm going to throw this out to Alan Carasso to jump in and ask Mark a question about Got Stormy.
Well, this is good because I've written about this race for tonight's paper. But Mark, can you explain? I mean, she ran such an awesome race at Saratoga, and we know that she got a setup that day. It seems like she was maybe closer to the pace in the Woodbine Mile than you might have expected. Is that a fair statement?
Maybe, but I thought her race at Woodbine was good. I knew going into Woodbine that was going to be a tough. It's just an entirely different world at Woodbine. One, she is a true miler. She might be able to beat lesser horses going a little farther than a mile. But Woodbine, with the 3/8 of a mile stretch, and then we went ahead and got a lot of rain. We had a lot of rain prior to the race. There was definitely some give in the ground. I knew she was going to struggle a little bit there, and I thought, If they were going to beat her, they were going to beat her there. It served a purpose. I've had tremendous luck, as you probably know, out of the Woodbine Mile with winning the Breeders' Cup with World Approval and also TEP. And I was fine with it. I think, and I would agree with what Bill said earlier, my best shot to win the Breeders' Cup this weekend is with her. I think everything sets up for she'll love the sharper turns. She will love the firmer going, and she is on top of her game right now. If I had any concern, she's too good. She is locked and loaded and ready to fire.
Mark, kind of a general question, but going into a big race like this, how much do you look at the other horses and kind of handicap the field, or do you just focus more on getting your horse right?
Yeah, mostly time I just worry about my horse because there's nothing else I can, there's nothing I can do about the others. Obviously, I handicap some just to see where I think we're going to be laying or if we need to make some adjustments. Most of the time, I just try to have my horse the best they can be and see. And like I said, I think it's a tough race, but she's tough. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
And Mark, with regard to War of Will, your last entry in the Breeders' Cup weekend, going into a $6 million race, a lot of trainers kind of stand pat and say, okay, this horse has gotten me to this position and, based on its running style and running condition. And yet you decided to add blinkers to this horse after 13 starts. What was the thought process behind that?
Well, we kind of been disappointed in him in the last couple of races. I'm always hesitant. I don't like putting blinkers on horses normally, but because sometimes it gets them too fired up. So we played with him for a little while and tried him on him, and he liked it. And he seemed to actually relax a little bit with them on and focus. And look, if he continues to run the races that he's ran the last two or three starts, he has no chance. So we have to do something to at least try to improve. And so we did that. We added the blinkers. He trained well with them and changed his training strategy a little bit, giving him a little more time between the races. And he's a horse too. He's another horse that, look, he has a turf pedigree. He has turf tendencies. He's an extremely talented horse, but the cuppier a track is, the more he struggles with it. I'm hoping that, I know the Santa Anita that we used to see, the harder, faster one, is kind of gone. I think this track's a little heavier than normal, but hopefully it's fast on Saturday. And he needs everything to line up for him. We know that this is a tall task, but if he can pull it off, my thought was this, and Gary's thought was this. If he comes with his A game, he can maybe pull it off. If he doesn't come with his A game, he couldn't win the Dirt Mile or the Breeders' Cup Classic. So if he happens to fire a big one, which we feel like he's sitting on, he might as well go big or go home, I said before.
Mark, how gratifying is it to have so many Breeders' Cup horses for so many different clients?
Very. You know, I have extreme, anybody that looked at, you know, we have some of the best owners in the game that put a lot of faith in me. So it's very gratifying. I was saying to somebody this morning, I can remember going to, I think it was Hollywood Park with my dad. I may have been 16, maybe 18 years old, and watching the first Breeders' Cup, and to sit there and think, you know, here I have six horses running in the Breeders' Cup. That's quite a nice thing. We've been very fortunate. We've won five Breeders' Cups in the last 4 years, which is nice. And I can tell you, the day after the Breeders' Cup, it's like Christmas. The day after the Breeders' Cup, I'll start preparing for the next Breeders' Cup.
Mark, before we let you go, sort of off the topic a little bit, but the idea of the Breeders' Cup returning to Woodbine is getting some traction now, whereas before the problems at Santa Anita, nobody seemed eager to return the Breeders' Cup to a synthetic surface, and now maybe people are thinking it is the right thing to do because of the safety concerns and the safer track. Being a guy that's won so many races at Woodbine, how do you weigh in on that subject? Would Woodbine and the synthetic surface work for the Breeders' Cup?
I think it would, and you know, you're touching on a subject that's very dear to me. Obviously, I think, you know, I probably run more horses on synthetic and dirt than anybody maybe in the world. So I do my own studies all the time, and I know without a doubt, there's not a lot of things I know for sure about in this game. I definitely know that the synthetic is better on the horses. And with all the trouble we're facing now with our great sport, we have to, you know, continue to look at it. I mean, what is best for horse racing? And I think it would be nice for people to see, you know, how things are done at Woodbine again and on the Tapeta.
Very good. Mark Cassie, thanks so much for your time. For all of us here on our team, we wish you well in the Breeders' Cup with all your starters, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
And John and I will smile big at you guys on Friday.
Okay. We'll be looking for you in the winner's circle.
Thanks, Mark.
Be well, guys.
All right, so now let's take a look at the Breeders' Cup races. And, of course, we're going to start with the Friday card. And, Alan, I have you down as our ace handicapper for the Juvenile Turf Sprint, which kicks it off, the fifth race at Santa Anita on Friday. And why don't you give us a brief handicapping thought on this one?
I mean, I want to know what you mean when you say ace. Ace Ventura, something like that.
Just you know, like Pedro Martinez. Number one guy.
Max Scherzer.
Given
tonight's happenings.
Yes.
You know, I think the discussion of the Juvenile Turf Sprint starts with the Wesley Ward duo. You know, Kamari ran such a giant race last time at Keeneland. Really blew me away. I had taken Chimney Rock in that race, thinking that Kamari was going to just jump from the gate and just burn like she's done in her races before. And Wesley made the comment that she's really not that good of a gate horse. He had discussed beforehand with Mike Smith that might not happen. Take a hold of her and let her make a run, and what a run that she made. So You know, she reproduces that effort. She's certainly right there. Four wheel drive has done nothing wrong in his two starts at Colonial and then in the Futurity. I suppose the question mark for four wheel drive is what's he going to do with this 5/8 trip? A little bit abbreviated. You know, maybe he's not quite as effective. Maybe he sits up on the pace. But I think the reality is with this race is that there are 12 horses, and a case could be made, really a legitimate case could be made for every horse. I've settled on Alligator Alley. I think his form is a little bit dirty. He's a winner two back at York and then was favored against Ali in the Flying Childers. Didn't run that great that day, but he's overcome some trouble, albeit on straight courses, and I think he's got a long shot stab.
We turn our attention now to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, and before we fully get to that race, we say that we will again be rooting for our compadre, John Green, with another miracle, co-owned with his father, Leonard, in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. And John, take it away for the Breeders' Cup, that was the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, and now we're talking about the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, which again, you guys are involved in this with Proven Strategies, the 30-1 in the morning line. So who do you like here besides your own horse?
Yeah, and you know, actually, it's funny. If I'm looking at it as an owner, you always look at it through rose-colored glasses and you hope that you have a shot. If I'm looking at it from a handicapping standpoint, there's a couple of horses in here you can make a case for ahead of us. Hit the Road is an improving More Than Ready colt who's been unbeaten at this distance. He ran a lights-out race after being off for 10 weeks. And basically, you know, this is the same distance and turf course that he'll compete on that he did in the Zuma Beach. So I really like that horse to win. Structor was an expensive two-year-old, $850,000. And he's under the tutelage of Chad Brown. He's undefeated in two starts, and he's probably ready to take a step forward. Arizona has the best Ragusan sheet number, but I'm a little leery but the fact that he's run so many races as a two-year-old, that as an owner, you get concerned when you run a horse five, six, seven times as a two-year-old. That does take some starch out of him. On top of that, he's looking to attempt, you know, flying over an ocean and a continent and running, you know, within 3 weeks. So even though he'll probably be the favorite, I think he's a beatable favorite. And if I was rounding out the trifecta box in this race, I would say the two maidens, Gear Jockey, and, of course, Proven Strategies. They'll be overlooked by the betting public, but I think they're going to have great value. Gear Jockey will appreciate the faster turf, cutting back in distance. And Proven Strategies, you know, had a really difficult trip in the Summer Stakes, only losing to Decorated Invader by two lengths. And if you watch that race on video, you can see that Gaff Leone, who makes a lot of good decisions, kind of got in between and made a left, and the horse in front of us went left and then had to steady and then go right. And at that point, the race was over. But we only lost by two lengths. So I think we really do have a puncher's chance in this race. But there are a couple of horses in here that I would be, if I was betting, I would bet on as well. Hit the Road, Structor, and Arizona in that order.
And we call upon now Brian DiDonato to tell us what he thinks about the Juvenile Fillies. All eyes will be on the morning line favorite, Donna Veloce, the 3-1 morning line favorite, despite the fact she's only run once at 6.5 furlongs, breaking her maiden by an explosive 9.25 lengths.
And I think she'd be the only Breeders' Cup winner, two-turn Breeders' Cup winner, to have ever won once. There's some stat like that. Her debut couldn't really have been more impressive. Obviously, they're showing a lot of confidence to run her here. I thought the race went through her and Wicked Whisper. I think the only way that one of them doesn't win is if they kind of cancel each other out on the front end. Bast, you know, it's a Baffert horse. She's coming on off a grade one win, but I'm not quite sure she's as good as some, you know, some of those, I guess those other two. British Idiom kind of seemed like the logical horse to pick up the pieces if the two speed horses, you know, go at it early. But I think those two will be tough on the front end.
All right, Brian, why don't you just keep going with the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf, which is next up on the schedule. And you are also our number one ace handicapper for this one. Roger Clemens or something like that. Yeah.
Garrett Cole.
Yeah, right.
This race to me went very much through the Europeans. I think out the 9 Albina and the 5 Daye just look like huge standouts to me. I'll be pretty surprised if one of those two doesn't win. I think Chad Brown's won 4 of the last 5 Juvenile Fillies Turfs, and he won the first one. But I'm, you know, not quite as strong of a hand as he had last year. His filly's nice, but I'll be pretty surprised if one of the Euros doesn't win this one.
Well, you must be Mr. Two-Year-Olds, because my list says that you're also the man up for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. A race that some of the wind was taken out of its sails with a scratch of Maxfield. But now we have two instead of three horses that everybody's going to keep their eyes on. Dennis's Moment and Eight Rings. I certainly think myself, and I think probably get some agreement from those here in the studio, that one of those two will win it. If so, which one, Brian, or are you looking a little outside the box here?
I guess I'm outside the box. They're obviously the two horses to beat. I liked Maxfield kind of thinking he was going to be the one to benefit if they went at it early.
Well, he's definitely not going to win. Right. I'll guarantee that.
That's true. The thing that kind of I find interesting is Dennis's Moment has been working very, very quickly. He seems like he's sitting on a huge race, but I could see him just blasting out of the gate and he and Eight Rings kind of going at it early. I'm definitely going to use them, but I think Scabbard is a little interesting. He really hasn't done anything wrong. He had a little trouble in the race behind Dennis's Moment. And, you know, if they go too fast early, I think he's the one who could pick up the pieces. And I think he's going to kind of get forgotten.
Anybody else have any thoughts they want to share? This is obviously the most important race of the Friday card. And I think if unless it's a 30-1 shot or something, people are going to be pretty excited about the winner of this race as a Kentucky Derby candidate.
I really think it comes down to those two horses. I mean, you know, just as an outsider looking in, you look at Dennis's Moment and all he's accomplished so far. Tis Now, he's royally bred out of Elusive Colony Mare, and Eight Rings, who, you know, they've already sold the breeding rights to. I mean, you know, if that doesn't tell you just how much talent the market thinks of him, nothing else will. So, you know, it looks like it's down to now a two horse race.
Looks that way on paper. So why don't we get to Saturday's card, and I'm going to kick it off with the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mayor Sprint. I think last week I pretty much said Covfefe can't lose. And
we bet on it, as a
yes,
matter of fact.
Yeah. Yes, we did. Now I've totally changed my mind, which, look, you know, that's what horse players and handicappers do. I hate the fact that she drew the one here, and I think that they have no choice from the one post but to go with her. And there's so much other speed in the race. Selcourt has speed. Danuska's My Girl has speed. I just don't see her. I think she's the best horse, but I just don't see her working out a particularly good trip in there. Heavens My Nikki might also show some speed in there as well. And I think that changes the complexion of things. So I'm now on Come Dancing. And, you know, I think on paper, she's probably the second best horse or maybe even the best horse. For one thing, she's been accomplishing all her feats against older horses. Whereas Covfefe is, except for one race where she got beat at Churchill earlier in the year, has only been beating three-year-olds. That's something to consider. And I just think Come Dancing is going to get a better trip in this race, the way the race sets up on paper. So, you know, she's a very logical horse herself. She's 5-2 in the morning line in the second choice. And, you know, again, I didn't see it. I wonder if anybody else did. But to work 110-1 on the training track at Belmont is remarkable. I mean, that what would you say, John? That track has got to be like 2 seconds slower.
It's 2 seconds slower. And the fact that they breezed her 3/4 of a mile so close to this race, I mean, they're really trying to get some air and get the edge on her. It's an outstanding breeze, though. You're right. You're absolutely right for pointing that out.
Anybody think it comes down to somebody besides Covfefe and Come Dancing? Or
I love a horse in here.
All right, let's hear it.
Bellafina.
Really? Okay.
Bet of the weekend.
Wow.
I think she loves Santa Anita. She's probably really a sprinter. I love betting horses like this. I hope she's better than 6-1, but I'd take 6-1.
You're not concerned about her last race in the Cotillion where
she moved too soon. Okay. Fast paced. She's not a 2-turn horse. She has wins going 2 turns, but she's not a 2-turn horse. I think she's going to run huge.
Yeah, the only counter argument I can give you, Brian, is that, you know, it looks to me like they're scrambling a little bit with her. The past two races, she's been off slow, which is very unusual for her. Usually she's close to the lead. And they've tried changing distances. They've tried with the blinkers. I would bet you, not having seen her train, but I would bet you she's a little bit off behind. And she doesn't have that early push. It's going to be a really hard scramble for her to make up the 7/8. But by all means, everyone's got an opinion. I'm just, you know, just as an owner looking at it, I'm sure if I looked at her vet bills, you'd go, ah. Huh. Okay.
I'm sure if you look at most of their vet bills,
you go, I'm betting it's somebody else. Right.
All right. Let's turn our attention now to the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. And interesting race in here. I think a sentimental favorite for me would be Pure Sensation, an 8-year-old who's still at the top of his game for Christophe Clément, is trying to win his first ever Breeders' Cup race. I believe I read that. Somebody please correct me if I'm wrong. And then Stormy Liberal, of course, trying to win this race for the third straight year. But John Green, you're up on this. Let's start with Stormy Liberal. You know, Peter Miller is so good with these turf sprinters. I wouldn't put an X to anything he runs in here. But, you know, certainly this horse doesn't look nearly as good as it did last year when he's coming into the Breeders' Cup.
Absolutely right. And you know, Bill, you can make a legitimate case for 8 or 9 horses in this group. You really can. And that's what you want when you're looking at any kind of a Breeders' Cup race. You want to have all those different opportunities and make a case for, just like Brian and I just did for, you know, for the Philly Sprint. But I'm taking Sheki Shabazz, who greatly improved after being given the Jason Service. and trying the turf. The horse has really improved over the past 10 weeks, albeit, you know, against lesser company, non-graded company. I think Irad Ortiz is nearly perfect, you know, for him and is nearly perfect on him. And the horse is a real true gate-to-wire candidate. Eddie Haskell is 18 for 21 on the turf, and he's a perfect 14 for 14 in the money at this distance. He loves the hard turf at Santa Anita and ran a monster race in the Eddie D, which is a grade two, despite being shuffled back and, you know, during the beginning stages of the race. And then finally, you have Ohm, who's a horse with the shortest name in racing history, which I love because it's easy to spell. But he's a horse that's easy to root for as well. He's been reinvented as a turf sprinter by trainer Peter Miller, and he's enjoyed his fastest figures in that category. And despite being off for the summer, you know, the 7-year-old's posted back-to-back bullet morning work. So back to, you know, what you were talking about before, Bill, of you know, recognizing all the information out there that's out there, including breezes. So I think that in that order, you know, Jason Service's horse, Shaggy, Eddie Haskell, and Ohm, that would be my trifecta box for the turf sprint in a very, very difficult to handicap race.
So Ohm is the answer to a racing trivia question. Can anybody come up with what I'm leading at here?
Beat American Pharoah in his debut.
That's right. One that's of two right. horses in history to beat American Pharoah. Very of course, Keen Ice and the Travers as well.
And so that's our stump the stud question of the day.
That's right, yes. And a 7-year-old is a horse. Maybe he'll go off to stud someday as well. It sure would help him to win this race. All right, my favorite race of the day, just because, again, I can't get enough of the big-ass fans, Dirt Mile. Again, you know, we choose sometimes to use these names of the sponsors of the races, and sometimes we don't. I will forever call this the big-ass fans Dirt Mile because I'm absolutely in love with the name, and I've got to go out to Home Depot and get me a big ass fan. But anyways, Alan, you're up on this one. Is it Omaha Beach? Is just, you know, a coronation for him for living up to all the hype?
I mean, I think he's going to get the right trip in here as well. I think he's going to be off. It looks like there's enough speed. And who knows what improbable is going to show up? And he's full of talent. I thought earlier this year when they knocked heads at Oaklawn, I thought these were two of the best three-year-olds out there. Improbable, for whatever reason, gets very fidgety behind the gate and then in the gate. And, you know, sometimes he doesn't have his head on mind on racing. I don't know which improbable is going to show up. You know, he figures to be part of the pace. Pace looks genuine enough to me. I think Omaha Beach will get the right tracking trip off of them and make a run at them. Yeah, I would be remiss not to mention my blue chipper. He did blow out 3/8 of a mile in 34 and 4.
This, of course, is the Korean Wonder Horse.
Yes.
7 for 8 in Korea, stepping outside the comfort zone of South Korea and coming into the Breeders' Cup.
So, again, I'm not saying that he's going to win the race. I think he is going to go out there and give a credible account of himself. Flavian Prat is in the irons. I also like the way Snapper Sinclair has looked training up to the race. He was another early arrival for Steve Asmussen, and he's just looked great. I mean, he gets into his work early, seems very eager and on the muscle. He's going to have his work cut out a bit from out there, and he's drawn 10. But I think he's going to run a good race as well. But for me, it's Omaha Beach on top.
Yeah, I sort of looked at it the same way. I don't think Omaha Beach is a good betting proposition because he's overhyped. I mean, everybody's fallen in love with this horse. And, you know, they might be right. But so, you know, I'm picking him. But at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, this horse is just going to be present no value whatsoever. You know, I'm sort of contradicting myself when I say this. You know, I think he's the most likely winner, but not a very good betting opportunity, 8-5 in the morning line. Now, there's one more horse that in here that you didn't mention that I want to bring up. And Spun to Run has got to run back to his last race where, you know, he totally woke up in a really sleepy just Saturday afternoon performance at a race no one was paying attention to at Parks. But he won by 6 3/4. He got a 110 buyer. And trainer Juan Carlos Guerrero is a friend of a friend and someone I know is very close to him. And he has thought all along this horse was, you know, again, he hasn't had the chance. He's mainly a claiming trainer, hasn't had a chance to work with too many really top horses. But, you know, he just thinks this horse doesn't breed the same air as any other horse he's ever trained. And it finally came to fruition in his last start. So, you know, he's got to run back to that. He's got to not bounce. But I think there's another horse that everybody should include in their tickets, because if he does run back to that last race, he's absolutely right there. He might even win the darn thing.
You just like him because he's out of a mare called Yawkey Way. That's right. Let's be fair, okay?
Yeah. Well, they changed the name of Yawkey Way to Jersey Street. So I guess they could. I wonder if they have to, like Noose, they have to change the name of Yawkey Way, the dam in there. So anybody have any more thoughts on the Big Ass Fans Dirt Mile?
I was a little interested in Spunderun. I think his last race was legit. And really, his other form isn't bad. I mean, you know, this Marty Jones was a good performance. He seems like a true two-turn miler to me. And it seems like a pretty wide-open race.
We will find out. All right. So let's now – I'm going to tackle the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. And I'm going to try to be a wise guy here and beat Sister Charlie. I mean, she's fabulous. She wins – she's been first or second in every single start she's made in North America since coming over from France and acquired by Chad Brown and Peter Brandt. She's won four straight, five straight, six straight. You know, she's as consistent as they come. But again, I'm looking at this from a standpoint of what kind of, you know, I'm looking at this more as a better than somebody who's just trying to like say who is going to win the race or who's the best horse in the field. And there's too many good Europeans in here to not take a shot against her. You know, the whole group of them are a little bit inconsistent. They're kind of in and out. But, you know, there's one after another, grade one winners. You know, I just think if Sister Charlie takes even the slightest step back, I think she might get defeated in here. So I'm looking really at two. Iridessa from the rail, who two starts back, won a grade one. Four starts back, she won a grade one, the Judmont Pretty Polly Stakes at the Cura. Going a mile and a quarter today's distance. So, you know, obviously we know she can go the distance. She, again, is a little bit inconsistent, but if she runs back to her best races, she certainly is capable of this. It looks like she likes firm going as well. Some of her races that weren't of her very best, like her last race when she was third, were on good to soft. And then this Villa Marina in here as well is coming up. This horse really showed up last time out for the first time, wins a grade one on the Longchamp card during ARC weekend, and comes in here for a trainer that's very good, Carlos Lafonparrias. I'm sure I butchered that pronunciation, something terrible. But let me throw this out to the floor. Anybody think I'm crazy to try to beat Sister Charlie in here?
Well, I think you're crazy anyway. But in this particular case, I think that you know, Chad Brown and Peter Brandt are doing everything in their power to try to make sure that Sister Charlie wins, so much so that they're bringing in
the
rabbit. You know, the six horse at 30-1 in order to ensure that nobody else is going to go to and steal the steal the race from gate to wire. I think that we're really stretching, in my humble opinion, really stretching to try to figure out how to beat Sister Charlie. The Euros are always an unknown quantity, and Alan, you may have more information on them than I do, but it seems like that, you know, at any given day, one of them may jump up and have a shot to beat Sister Charlie, but none of them are showing the consistency where you'd say, that's the horse that I identify.
Yeah, let me just interject before Alan answers that. That was one of my problems handicapping this race. You know, I took a stand that I want to try to beat her with one of the Europeans, but I look at the form of these horses, and it's just guesswork to me. Right. I'm just guessing. You know, it's not like anybody's coming in with the kind of credentials and consistency where you said, okay, this is the one. You know, so I just guessed with, you know, two horses that have grade one wins on the card. But yeah, I want to hear from Alan as well.
Interesting. Brian and I were talking about this just before we went on the air. I do like Iridessa, and if you look back at the Pretty Polly, the name of the filly that she beat that day should be familiar. Magic One ran second to Bricks and Mortar in both the Pegasus, where she was beaten, where Bricks and Mortar won by 2.5, and then Bricks and Mortar was three parts better than her in the Arlington Million last time. So I don't think she's the craziest idea out there. I also wonder if the presence of Ty Yee says as a rabbit doesn't help the competition as much as it helps Sister Charlie. You know, in Europe, where they run races at a sit sprint, so slow early and fast late, I know Sister Charlie has a kick. She's got a good turn of foot. I wonder if she can out turn of foot the Euros.
That will be one of the questions asked.
I have an opinion too.
Okay.
Villa Marine, I really like. This trainer brought another filly over a couple weeks ago for the E.P. Taylor, named Platan, who ran third at 17-1, earned 100 buyer. On paper, this filly's completely superior to her. And if she runs that much better than this one did, I think she's got a huge shot.
All right. It's good to hear because that's going to be one of my plays. I'll throw you guys a curveball, but I just noticed this. In the wagering menu for this race, you know, the usual pick three, pick six, this, that, super high five. Does anyone know what the head-to-head wager is? Look at the if you have the racing form printed up, look at the wager menu for this race. It's the first time I've ever heard of this.
I think they did that last year. I don't remember much about it, but it sounds familiar.
All right. So we're going to figure that out and as we move along here on the card. Now we turn to the Breeders' Cup Sprint. I think this is the best race of the day. Just filled with quality and good horses. So, Alan, you are up to take the reins of this race.
Understanding the beast that Matoli has become this year, I'm going to try to take a stand against him. I do think he's got the ability to sit off the pace. I mean, we've talked about the pace coming from Chancelot, Imperial Hint, and Matura Sky outside was second from on the pace in the Golden Shaheen earlier this year. So the pace is going to be on. Is Matoli going to go with the speed inside with the other three stacked up outside of him, or is Santana going to take a hold of him, guide him to the outside, and let him try to get first run on them and then hold off whatever closers there are in there? I think Forensic Fire is interesting from off the pace, even if six furlongs may not be his best gig. I think even more interesting is Whitmore, who's run well in the Breeders' Cup before, was second last year, albeit not really dangerous behind Roy Age. But his race at Keeneland, he missed the break. He was on the best part of the track, admittedly, but he made a good solid run to get within a half length of Engage. And I think the pace is going to be much hotter this time to set it up for a kick. And Whitmore is a bit in and out. You don't always know what you're going to get, but if he brings his best finishing kick, I think he can make some noise.
Alan, I'm going to disagree with you on something, and then we'll see if John or Brian are on the Alan Carrasso camp or the Bill Finley camp. I think Chancelot's going to be loose here, and he may have to go 21 flat to do it. The other horses that have speed have the ability to stalk, and I talked to Louis Carbajal, the trainer of Imperial Hint. He told me this was about a week and a half ago, says he definitely doesn't want to be on the lead. To me, this is the only horse in here that is have to have a lead type. And I think people are going to realize that and not want to get involved in the speed duel with him. And I could actually see him going wire to wire. Like, again, he's going to have to go 21-1 to clear this field, but I think he's fast enough to do it. You know, Jorge Navarro, how he does it is kind of a mystery, but we all know his ability to get horses into the winner's circle, and he's emerged from just a claiming trainer to having horses like Chancelot. Anybody see a familiar scenario or think there's going to be a speed meltdown in here?
I think the scratch of Landeskog definitely helped Navarro's horse. On pace figures, they're pretty similar, but I would say I can definitely see where you're coming from. I don't love Chancelot, so it kind of worries me, and I guess I'll kind of have to use him defensively. I thought Catalina Cruiser was kind of interesting. He's just become the forgotten horse. For a horse who's 7-for-8 lifetime, you know, this big, good-looking horse, obviously had a lot of hype behind him early on. And maybe 6 is a little sharp for him, and maybe the rail's not great for him, but, you know, if he's 6-to-1, I think he's worth taking a look at.
And one of the things I always look at when we're looking at a handicapping race is, you know, the jockeys are all independent contractors. So who are the jockeys selecting? And I've never seen, I can't recall at least, a Breeders' Cup race where half the field has a different jockey riding the horse than it did previously. You know, Rosario is back on Catalina Cruiser. Smith is on, you know, Creek Hustle. Then you have, Santana obviously rides Matoli, but, Johnny Velasquez is on Engage for the first time. Chancelot is Ortiz and Whitmore with Pratt. Do you guys remember a grade one race where half the field has new jockeys?
No, it's a good point.
Good point.
So how do you handicap that, Alan? How do you figure out, like, is it a domino effect where somebody actually selected, like Rosario said, I want to ride Sadler's horse? Or is it that, you know, he got bumped off of off a different horse, off of Whitmore, and then that's kind of the way the dominoes fell?
I guess, if this were 25 non-2 at Arlington on a Wednesday afternoon and Jose Valdivia was taking over for Sophie Doyle, I'd be more apt to put some weight into that. I mean, I think at this level, I'm not sure I want to get too caught up in that. So, but that, I mean, that's great. Fine.
It's interesting. It's interesting.
And I think in that case, Rosario has ridden a lot of big horses for Sadler. And,
Yep. yeah, I would think that that would err to the side of a positive. Hmm.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the next race, is the Breeders' Cup Mile. I'm going to handle this one. One of the first things I noticed about this race is there's absolutely no speed in here. And I have no idea how the pace is going to unfold. But I think that, first of all, I think that's a big, that's going to make me throw out Uni. Hate to throw out anything trained by Chad Brown, but this horse, I think, needs a fast pace to get up, especially against the boys. I'm not a big Circus Maximus fan either, even though this horse is coming off a grade one win at Longchamp. There's something about this horse I just can't put my finger on that I don't think this is one of, you know, superstars that Aidan O'Brien's bringing over. And I've got a stat for you guys that I think is really going to surprise you. Doesn't everybody in the room think, oh my God, it's the Breeders' Cup, Aidan O'Brien's fantastic? Isn't that sort of the prevailing wisdom?
Of course.
But he's 0 for his last.
He's 8.7% in the Breeders' Cup.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. He's had 138 starters. Well, he's had 12 wins. So everybody remembers the 12 wins. But, I mean, he's, you know, he unloads for the Breeders' Cup. He's in every year with 10, 12 horses, sometimes even more. Here's another thing that's wild. I mean, you know, look I'm not going to name O'Brien's probably the best trainer in the world. But, you know, it's just, I think it's noteworthy to mention these statistics. Also, he's had 19 starters in North America this year, 0 for 19.
I think so. When you look at the horses that he sends over here, they're cool more fourth stringers.
Sometimes,
they're kind of afterthoughts. They're not bringing their A team.
Yeah. So I just took a stab on a long shot. Lucullen for Kieran McLaughlin. Anybody know the pronunciation of this horse?
Lucullen.
Okay. I tried to get in touch with Kieran today, and I didn't have any luck because I wanted to learn more about this horse. Obviously, this horse had some sort of huge problem that it was off from May of 2018 to July of this year. But since he's come back, it looks to me like McLaughlin has really taken his time. The horse has won 3 of 4, including a nice third in the Woodbine Mile, then comes back and wins the Knickerbocker. And it looks like, you know, he's just brought this horse along. You know, with this in mind, the horse has improved a little bit. This is not a front runner, but I think the horse will be fairly close to what should be a very slow pace. And just a stab in here because I don't like the favorites. A win by Got Stormy would not surprise me at all from Mark Cassie. And I just think this is a race where, especially, you know, if you're into the pick fours or whatnot, you better go pretty deep because this race is anybody can win it, John.
And Bill, you know, you tapped into something that actually is very insightful. And that is with Kieran's horse. When we had a Thread of Blue running in all the $1 million races this summer at Saratoga and at Belmont, we were anticipating running him in the Breeders' Cup Mile. And Kieran pulled us aside and said, number one, I really don't want to run a 3-year-old against all their horses. And number two, I don't think you can beat this horse.
Wow.
So, you know, that was in a private moment. And you know, that's why this horse is here. But the fact that there's no speed in the race is making me kick myself about not running a Thread of Blue in here, quite frankly.
I'm with you. I think the pace is hard to... it's hard to decipher. But that being said, I'm not going to be surprised if the pace is decent. I don't think it's going to boil over or anything like that. But I think an interesting horse from the front is Hey Gammon from the 13, Frankie Dettori. I guess his best form, if you look at his paper, his best form is over 7 furlongs in Europe. But he's consistently ridden for speed. He's a staying 7-furlong horse, if that makes any sense. So he gets out there, dictates the pace, gets tackled, and then finds more. So I think he's interesting from out there. He's definitely going to get ridden for speed, given his draw. I think Bolo can show some speed, and Circus Maximus has always been prominent in his races as well. So that's not to say the pace is going to be fast, but I think there are 3 pace elements.
Interesting take on that. All right, John, you're up for the Breeders' Cup Distaff, and can we just say this is all Midnight Bisou and Move On, or is it more complicated than that?
You know, you guys were talking before about how the mile is the Big Ass Fan Mile, is sponsored by the Big Ass Fan.
Mm-hmm.
This race should be sponsored by Crayola because it's going to be chalk.
Right.
It's strictly going to be, you know, Blue Prize and Midnight Bisou, quite frankly. And you can almost toss a coin in the air and say, okay, you know, Blue Prize, if it wasn't from the 11 hall, would she have a better chance? Absolutely. But the fact is she's in the 11 hall. And I think that really sets it up for Midnight Bisou. And then for a really interesting discussion that we're going to have all winter long about who should be horse of the year.
We will find out. So is anybody trying to beat Midnight Bisou in this room?
I always try to find one, but she just seems like probably the most solid horse on the card.
I can't beat her. I had a strong opinion of the Keelan meet that the rail was not where you wanted to be. For most of that meet. And for that reason, I would try to run Dunbar Road up in the second, but I cannot oppose Midnight Bisou.
All right, Alan, you're up for the Breeders' Cup Turf, and very interesting race. But again, you know, the back-to-back races, everybody's going to be looking at the Horse of the Year battle between Midnight Biso and Bricks and Mortar. And we just said that the one favorite, everyone agreed, will likely win. I'm not the center stage for this race. That's you, Alan. But I can't see Bricks and Mortar losing. I think he's even a more likely winner than Midnight Biso. That when I looked at the race, that's how much I was convinced this horse is not going to lose this. But, you know, if you have a contrary opinion, feel free.
So, I mean, clearly on paper, I guess the biggest knock or the biggest criticism those that the contrarians are going to adopt is that he's untried over the mile and a half. And how do we know he's going to stay? In tonight's Breeders' Cup edition in the TDN, I took a little bit of a look at his pedigree. First of all, it's George Strawbridge breeding. So you know you've got some, or usually have some stayers in the pedigree. And there are stakes performers under his first or second dam that won or ran well in races like the Glens Falls. That's 11 furlongs. And the Weah Stakes is 12 furlongs. So personally, I'm not trying to beat him because I don't think he can get the mile and a half. I think he'll stay. The question is whether he's better than Old Persian and Anthony Van Dyke. And I'm going to bet Old Persian. His races in Dubai were very good. His race at Epsom was not. They regrouped, ran in Germany. He ran well, but not great. Came to Woodbine and really won that race with a fair bit of authority. So I'm going to try to beat Bricks and Mortar with Old Persian.
All right, I'd like to hear from anybody else. Brian, can you beat Bricks and Mortar?
I'm singling Old Persian.
Wow. Singling?
Yeah.
Okay. I like the confidence.
I mean, his two races in Dubai were superior to anything else anyone's run. They've been pointing here since then. His race in Germany was fine off the layoff. People are going to be thrown off because of the figure he earned last time, but that was one of those races where a horse went out and was winging and was 20 lengths in front, so I don't know that I'd, you know, trust the final time or figures. Charlie Appleby has sent a lot of horses over here to win, and I think he's a good separator in the pick four.
John?
So I should be the contrarian and pick Bricks and Mortar? I'll take that all day long. Yeah, I really think that it's Bricks and Mortar's race to lose. Even the two races that he didn't win, he lost by 3/4 of a length in both of them, and those were both going 9 furlongs. This race is even further, and it's just his racing style is just going to be such that Chad knows he's got the best horse in the race. He's going to tell Junior Ortiz just to stay away from everybody, basically stay a little bit wide and make a big sweeping run. I look at it the same way, guys. I always look at the favorite first, and then who can beat it? Can the pace beat it? Can another horse beat it? Is it going to beat itself mentally? And in this particular race, it's really going to be hard-pressed. Not saying that Old Persian can't do it, because he's a phenomenal horse, and first-time Lasix, he really improved. But I think it's Bricks and Mortar's race to lose.
Finally, we get to the Breeders' Cup Classic, and we talked a lot last week about how unusual this race is. That we were actually pretty critical, especially Joe, basically just dismissed this race like, yeah, after the turf is over, I can just go home and not worry about this crappy $6 million race that's coming up. One of the reasons why there's not a lot of steam behind this race or not a lot of electricity is because there's really nobody in here, with a possible exception of Code of Honor, and it would take a lot for him to become a Horse of the Year contender. He'd have to win, and probably Bricks and Mortar and Midnight Biso would have to lose. So that's a lot of ifs. Other than that, it's just kind of a little bit of a blah race. Look, it is still the Breeders' Cup Classic, and a lot of people are coming to this race trying to get out on the day. So it's our job here to handicap and try to come up with a winner in this thing. And why don't we go around the room, Brian? I'll start. I'm very surprised that I did this, because I was, everybody's trying to knock McKenzie, saying he can't go a mile and a quarter, he's not that good, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I settled on him. I don't know why he didn't beat Mongolian Groom last time out. I don't like the jockey switch. I think Mike Smith is just a better rider than Joel Rosario. I certainly wouldn't have done that, but the more I looked at this race, I just said, you know what? This is the best horse. Even though he is 2 for 6 this year, the Breeders' Cup Classic last year, he didn't run. So forget that. That's no indication of his mile and quarter ability. The only other time he tried it was in the Big Gap. He only lost by a nose. I mean, I know he's 2 to 5 and everybody expected him to win that day. But a second by a nose at a mile and a quarter doesn't suggest to me that this horse, cannot run a mile and a quarter. So I'm very surprised that I wound up on him. But the more I looked at the race, I just kept coming back to him. Brian?
Yeah, he's one of five I'll use. This race really, I have a lot of strong opinions this weekend. This is definitely not one of them. I ended up leaning on Vino Rosso, I guess. He likes a mile and a quarter. He should sit a nice trip. He's as good as any.
John?
I think that McKenzie is definitely the horse to beat on sheet numbers. He ranges from the lower the better, for those of you who don't know. He ranges from a 0 to a 2, and he's done that 8 of the past 10 races. He runs a 0, 1, or a 2.
Now, of course, those are the Ragusan
numbers.
I use the Thoroughgraph numbers, right, which are kind of a different scale.
Yep. So really, he is the horse to beat, but I'm making a case for Yoshida. Again, from the sheet numbers standpoint, he's got some very good numbers he's rounding into, and I like the revenge factor. I like the fact that Mike Smith is on a Bill Mott horse and is being, taken off of McKenzie. And if for no other reason, I think that he's not that you need an additional reason to win a $6 million race, but the revenge factor runs deep, in literature and in horse racing. And I think that Yoshida is going to be definitely a horse to be reckoned with when they hit the wire.
Alan?
I couldn't argue with Yoshida either. Certainly ran well last year. I think mile and a quarter hits him right between the eyes. I think he's going to sit the right kind of trip. A lot about this race depends on how you sort out the pace scenario, not to sound like a broken record, but where is the pace coming from here? McKenzie's going to be forwardly placed. Mongolian Groom certainly seems to want to be part of it. Vino Rosso. So those three are drawn 8, 9, and 10. Let's say that they break. What's War of Will going to do? The blinkers are going on.
Blinkers, yeah.
Right? So do they pop him away from the gate, and is he part of the pace? Does he take back, which was a successful strategy in the Preakness? I think that given that those three speeds are outside, they're going to clear, get down to the fence. It's going to give Code of Honor a chance to get over and save some ground early through the lane the first time, hope that they go a good gallop, make a good closing kick. I'm going with Code of Honor.
Nobody has even mentioned a late. Anybody think the filly can do it?
It's funny you mentioned that, because I actually had written down next to her, she's in over her head. Over the last 2 years, she's 0-5 in grade ones, and that's against fillies. And now she's trying against the arguably the best boys that are out there. She's trending to a decent number, if you believe in trends. But I think Elite is in over her head.
And one other horse I want to bring up. I gave a thought to picking Higher Power. And I don't know why this horse was flat. Maybe the stumble at the start and the awesome again. But you've seen, John Sadler still has a pretty poor Breeders' Cup record, even though he won last year and got the monkey off his back with Accelerate. But if you look back at the Pacific Classic, where this horse just exploded, ran a 107 buyer at the mile and a quarter distance, which one is going to show up, the one in the awesome again or the one in the Pacific Classic, or the horse that was, not anywhere close to a grade one type horse until it just pulled that phenomenal victory in the Pacific Classic. I could certainly see this horse being a major part of this. Anybody want to tell me I'm right or wrong?
I think if he runs that race, obviously he can win. The problem was he just had so many races. He has so many races that are not as good as that, and I just couldn't really figure out why he was going to run his A race this time. I'm a little afraid of him, but I don't think I'll use him.
All right. Well, that covers it. We thank Mark Cassie for coming on today and being our guest and giving us a scoop on all his horses running in the Breeders' Cup. Want to wish John Green the best of luck out at Santa Anita with his runners.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Terrific to see a member of our team in the winner's circle, so we'll certainly be rooting for him. And I want to thank the rest of the team, Alan Carasso and Brian DiDonato. And our man Joe Bianco will be back next week in this chair to fill in. To take over again as I filled in this week. I hope I did Joe proud in his shoes. Thanks for listening to the TDN Writers Room.